Well, I did get to thinking at work that day what I could speak on that was appropriate for this time of year. No, I'm not speaking on Mother's Day. Because, you know, we are supposed to always be speaking in the right season, if you would, about those things that God's people have their hearts and minds on. And one of the, probably the great themes that we see running through the Scriptures is how the great God that we worship takes ordinary people like us, and He does extraordinary things with and through those people to accomplish oftentimes miraculous purposes. Their lives are given then in the Scriptures for you and I today as we learn and read about their lives, for us to come to have a more personal encounter, if you would, and a more personal relationship with God through the examples that He gives us of His people. So no matter who we are, no matter where we've been, each and every one of us can come into that very personal relationship with a loving, wonderful God. Now, there are certain scriptures and certain books in the Bible that we find are or have become associated with certain aspects of the Jewish religion. And they do carry a parallel connection with our understanding of God's plan of salvation as is laid out in the observance of God's holy days. Such a person and such a connection is found in the book of, who knows? Anybody? Ruth. Happy Mother's Day. Just so coincidental, it is a book that is very appropriate for Mother's Day. But that's not the purpose. When I was thinking about what to speak on, I thought of this book because it is very much directed to the time in which we are living right now. Now, we've all heard many sermons, I think, over the years about this book. It's a very small book. It's only 4 chapters long, and we're going to read every word. No, we are going to read most of it because this book truly contains some absolutely marvelous lessons for you and I. And it's just another example of what amazing God we worship, that He can take the lives of ordinary people and record them in His Scriptures, and we today, this many thousands of years later, are sitting here reading about what happened in those people's lives, and we are learning from what they went through. Only our great God could do that. So, overall, the book of Ruth can be described as a saga of tragedy turned into triumph. Now, it is normally read in the Jewish synagogues at the morning services during Shabbat. Shabbat is that time that they call the Feast of Weeks. Sounds familiar to all of us, doesn't it? It's that time that we will be observing, or we do observe, 49 weeks after the Sabbath, the weekly Sabbath, following Passover. This is a time in which we will be observing Pentecost. So it seems like this is a good time for us to go through this marvelous book in God's Word. Now, let's ask ourselves as we go through this message today, because there is a purpose for us reviewing the book of Ruth. Why is the book of Ruth so essential for us to understand? I hope I can help glean a little bit of that as we go through this today. Believe me, we can't cover everything that's in these 4 chapters. There have been books and books and books written about this little book. It's amazing what is there. I think we'll come to find that it's a simple lesson that's played out by simple people that produces a profound healing in their lives. healing that all of us find ourselves in need at times as we go through this very difficult life we live. At times when we might find ourselves in what I call a wilderness state. You know what it's like being in the wilderness. You're sort of lost. You don't see any way out. And you're kind of wandering around aimlessly trying to find something that looks familiar to you. And sometimes I think we find ourselves spiritually in that state. Our lives oftentimes don't work out quite like we thought they would. So no matter your background or experiences, whether those experiences have been mostly good or mostly bad, we all face times of doubt, times of fear, times when we do not have that peace of mind that Cleo talked about. We all face those times. So the book of Ruth provides you and me an internal compass, a guide, if you would, that if we study the book of Ruth, and as we look at the story of Ruth, consider how her experiences that are revealed in this story relate to our personal life. That's what it's there for. It's not there just to give us a nice little story to read in the scriptures. Nothing that God gives us is without a purpose, and we need to be looking for that purpose. And of course, this is something that only you can do personally as you meditate on this and on any of God's Word as you study God's Word, because it's all designed to help us find our way in this darkened world in which we live. Now, one of the great lessons from the book of Ruth is going to demonstrate to you and me that the power that God has in effectively working out in our lives a way for you and I to have closure to our past. I could ask every one of us to raise our hand of how many still struggle with things in their past that they have not resolved in their heart and mind. Probably every one of us. I know I would have to raise my hand. But you see, when we go through the book of Ruth, every time we go through the book of Ruth, it helps us understand when we relate to the story, how you and I can come to leave our past behind. And sometimes that past that we're hanging on to is like an anchor around our spiritual necks. And we have to be able to let those things go. Maybe we even feel at times that God just hasn't been fair. God has treated us in a way that makes us feel like He doesn't care what's happening to us. Again, maybe every one of us have felt that at times. Maybe there's been hurt and pain that has come from another person. And this could have happened yesterday. It could have happened 10 years ago. And we're still struggling with that pain and with that hurt. We have to learn to let it go. The question we struggle with is really, why? Why did it happen this way? Maybe the example of Ruth can help lead us forward from where each of us may find ourselves today. Ruth shows us that we are able to step into the future in confidence and, more importantly, in faith. That we can have an abiding, abounding, and growing faith of God's presence in our lives. And that's what we want. That's what every one of us seek every day of our lives. Now, it's interesting as you study the various writings on Ruth, and believe me, there are many out there, you begin to see why it is read so much during the spring festivals. Notice one simple parallel. We have the story of putting off the old woman of Moab and then walking in new in faith in a new land and coming up on a Savior in the form of the man named Boaz. We know that she did not know about Boaz before she came back into the land with Naomi. She didn't know this man. She didn't understand anything about this man. But this man proved to be rock solid and was there to save and redeem her. So we see from this simple parallel example in the story that the story of Ruth in many ways pictures the spring holy days that you and I observe. So now, to understand the cultural climate in which this story takes place, we need to go back to the last verse in the preceding book, and that is the book of Judges. So if you would turn to the book of Judges, the last chapter in Judges. It is said that Ruth was written by Samuel, who wrote Judges, and I don't know if that can be proven without any question. But here in the last chapter of Judges, Judges chapter 21, notice how he describes the times in which Ruth was living. Judges 21 and verse 25. In those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. Kind of sounds like today, doesn't it? Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. Now, as we go through the book of Ruth, Samuel begins to fill in, if you would, the rest of the story about a very real people with very real problems who worship a very real God. The same God that you and I are here on His holy Sabbath worshiping today. These are a people who stand out, if you would, in a world that no doubt was extremely discouraging, absolutely was antagonistic, especially toward those people who were striving to live God's way of life. So at the time of Ruth, which was about 1100 or 1115 BC, you could say it was pretty tough being a Christian. Because the so-called religious society was one where everyone was doing their own thing as far as religious observance was concerned. But the true followers of God, who strive to live in obedience to His law, they were there. They weren't large in numbers. But in this very hostile religious world, they stood out. And I hope every one of us can say that in the world in which we live in, we stand out too. Not in a negative way, but in a godly, positive way. Let's capture the setting that this story takes place. We'll get to it in a minute. I promise. We really will. The setting is basically in pastoral Bethlehem. It's during the spring harvest season, because as we see, it mentions the harvest of the barley fields, which was the early harvest. We heard about that during Unleavened Bread. It's the time of, in other words, get this, it was the time of the first fruits. Who are God's first fruits? I'm looking at some of them right now. So you might say, in listening to this sermon, this is a season that we're in right now. We are in that time. It takes place during this period of time. Now, the book of Ruth basically has three characters. Three people. That's basically it. There's a few others mentioned. But it's the story of the life of these three people as they come together in their individual lives. The three characters in our story are Ruth, Naomi, and Boaz. I dare say every one of you have read this entire book probably many times. It's the story of these three individuals. Three unlikely people from whom God is teaching us a great deal. One is a woman that is basically marginalized through the death of her husband and is now a widow. Another is a woman living in what they've called a patriarchal society. In other words, it was in a land where women weren't all that well treated, especially women who were left alone. Another was a woman who was younger, and she was a Gentile. She was a foreigner. She was not of the tribe of Judah. And then lastly, we have a man whose mother was none other than Rahab, who had hidden the two spies that Joshua had sent into Jericho to survey the strength of the city. I think we may have heard about that during Unleavened Bread. Sounds like a interesting story, especially, you know, many people feel that Rahab was a prostitute or a harlot, as she is called in Joshua 2. Now, if you read that and think about it, I think today they could make probably a blockbuster movie with those characters and that story, couldn't they? But as you study into this, and many commentators verify, that Rahab probably was not a prostitute. Now, many of you may or may not have heard that before. But it's believed that she ran what we would call a boarding house. It was a place where people that were coming into the city would go and they would stay there for a temporary time. Kind of like a motel or a hotel, if you would. This is the reason God led them to take up lodging in her house. Because, think about it, people were coming and going all the time. Strangers coming into the city, they would go there, rent a room, and then they would leave. So, nobody would really notice these spies, would they? Makes sense to me. I don't know if that can be proven, but that's what many people believe. The good news of the book of Ruth is that God can and will use anyone who is open to Him and open to His purposes. That is one lesson that we can't let pass by in the book of Ruth. So let's begin looking into this wonderful story that God has had preserved for you and me. Ruth chapter 1 and verse 1. Ruth chapter 1, verse 1. Now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to dwell in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. So we see that there was a famine. Seems like famines happened a lot in that agricultural land. When the weather went south, their livelihood went with it. So this man, who we learn was Elimelech, took his wife and his two sons, and he moved to the land of Moab, where apparently the famine wasn't quite as bad. So right off, we see a valuable lesson in this story. It is that God will often use adversity in our lives to test us, to test His servants, and to move us from where we are into new environments, to move us into new situations, not so we can fail, but so we can grow. And we must always keep that in our minds. When we're going through tough times, when things have changed, it's not to destroy us, it's to help us grow. Because that's what God wants us to be doing. Then Elimelech dies, leaving Naomi with her two sons. Her two sons eventually marry women of Moab. And then it tells us that they lived in Moab then for 10 years, and then her two sons die. You mothers relating to this? Leaving Naomi and her two foreign-born daughter-in-laws. Now, we're left here then with three women, all alone, in a society that was anything but kind in its regard for women, especially women that were left on their own. So, what were they going to do? Let's drop down to verse 6. Then she arose, Naomi arose, with her daughters-in-law, that she might return to from the country of Moab, for she had heard that in the country of Moab, where she was living, she had heard that the Lord had visited his people by giving them bread. Therefore, she went out from the place where she was, and her two daughters-in-law with her, and they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. So she was going back home, because the famine was no longer in the land, and she felt that she had no future whatsoever staying in Moab, that she needed to go back to her home. So the famine had passed, and she was going to return. Now I want you to notice in verse 7 what it says. Therefore, this is a word that we see used in the Scriptures many, many times. And I think we've said before, every time we read that term, therefore, we need to pause. And we need to contemplate what it is that God is trying to get us to see or understand from these Scriptures. It says, therefore, she went out from the place where she was. It's like God called Naomi. And it says, she went. This has about the same sense, if you would, as that of Abraham nearly 500 years earlier when God called Abraham. And remember what it says of Abraham? He went. It says that he departed not knowing where he was going. Naomi at least knew she was going back to Judah. It says, by faith he left his home and he became a pilgrim and a sojourner in a foreign land. What we see here is that Naomi and Ruth, and in the beginning her other daughter-in-law, Orpah, were about to embark on their journey of faith. To leave what they had known for many years, not knowing what was to lie ahead. And it says she went with her two daughters-in-law. So let's go down to verse 8. Now I want us to think about as we go through this, the character of the people that we're reading about. Because if we don't think about that, if we don't recognize the character that these people show, we're going to miss some of the greatest lessons from this book. Verse 8, and Naomi said to her daughters-in-law, go, return go, return each to her mother's house. The Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant that you may find each rest, each in the house of her husband. So she kissed them, and notice, they lifted up their voices and wept. So Naomi is urging these two daughters-in-law to go back to their families. They were of Moab. That was the land, that was where their families were. And she was thinking about her daughters-in-law, what was best for them. But it says, they both lifted up their voices and wept. They didn't want to leave Naomi. Verse 10. And they said to her, surely we will return with you to your people. But Naomi said, turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Are there still sons in my womb that they may be your husbands? Turn back, my daughters. Go. Three times she entreated them to return home. "Go, for I am too old to have a husband. If I should say I have hope, if I should have a husband tonight and should also bear sons, would you wait for them till they were grown? Would you restrain yourselves from having husbands? No, my daughters, for it grieves me very much for your sakes that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me." Do you recognize the character that Naomi was exhibiting here? She urges them for their good to return home. We have three women, all alone, with no means of livelihood, with no husband, no father, no one to provide for them. Can you imagine what a desperate situation that had to be? Yet, her daughter-in-laws didn't want to leave her. Naomi literally means, her name means, pleasant one. Isn't that beautiful? I've never known anybody, well, maybe I did know a Naomi once. I think I did. Pleasant one. She must have been a very pleasant person. She must have set a wonderful example of faith for these two young women, for them to desire to remain with her under such trying conditions that they found themselves in. It says that Naomi was grieving. That's probably an understatement. She had lost her husband, and then she lost her two sons, and now she was left with no means of support. That's a lot for a person to endure in a relatively short period of time. You see, Naomi didn't have the answers, at least yet. She knows there's a God, but she doesn't really quite understand what God is doing. But you see, that's all right. Remember, God's ways aren't our ways. His thoughts aren't our thoughts. But notice what happens in verse 14. And here is a crucial point that we don't want to miss. "Then they lifted up their voices and wept again, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her." There's something fascinating here about Ruth, who is going to be in the line of David, who is going to be in the line of Jesus Christ. That's why Ruth's story should be of great interest to you and I. Something wonderful is transpiring here as revealed in these simple words, "But Ruth clung to her." Let me ask a question for you to consider. Was Orpah a bad individual? Had she done something wrong by going back to Moab, which she ultimately did? Had she done something wrong by going home after three times Naomi implored them to go back home? Was it wrong for her to hug and kiss her mother-in-law and then turn and leave? No. Orpah didn't do anything wrong. It's simply that Ruth did something better. You see, there was a choice that had to be made. A choice. It's the same choice that we see men and women of faith have had to make down through the ages of time. And it's a choice that you and I have to make each day in our lives. So somewhere on the road between Moab and Bethlehem, Ruth made her choice to follow the ways of God. There was no return here for Ruth once she made that choice. She was putting her hand to the plow, and there was no going back to her past. No going back to her past. Verse 16. We have what is known as the Song of Ruth here in verse 16 and 17. Let's read these. But Ruth said, "Entreat me not to leave you, or to turn back from following after you. For wherever you go, I will go. And wherever you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. The Lord do so to me and more also, if anything but death part you and me." There is so much symbolism in these words of Ruth. And it just isn't symbolism. This is reality for God's people. Even with her young husband dead and the chance to go home, Ruth is choosing to abandon her past. She is giving up on Moab. She's giving up on the old world. She's giving up on the old ways. Life may not have been fair to Ruth and Naomi, but she was saying, "I'm going to step out in faith with you." How many times do you and I have to step out in faith and turn our back on this world in which we live? Daily. Daily we must do that. It's interesting that some commentaries say that in this poem or this song, Ruth doesn't use the term Elohim for God. Elohim is a term that foreigners would use for the great God. But instead, she uses the other term of Yahweh. Yahweh is a term used of a personal God. Ruth had chosen to have a personal relationship with God, and that she was going to walk a new way of life. Verse 18. When Naomi saw that she, Ruth, was determined to go with her, she stopped speaking to her. Now, this doesn't mean that Naomi was mad at Ruth. It simply means that Naomi saw something in Ruth. She saw that Ruth was determined. She saw that Ruth was not going to be dissuaded from what she had made the choice to do. So Naomi simply stopped trying to persuade her to go back home. How many ways are you and I persuaded to go back to our past? That's what Satan and the world are trying to do to us every single day. Some way, somehow, we're being tempted to go back to the past. Follow the example of Ruth. So they traveled until they came to the city of Bethlehem. And it says the city was excited about Naomi's return. Remember, she and her husband had been gone 10 years, 15 years, not sure. But we know at least 10, longer than that. So they were excited at her return. And it says the women of the city said to themselves, "Is this Naomi?" Verse 20. Notice what Naomi said to them. Now again, let's pay attention to the character of the people. "But she said to them, 'Do not call me Naomi. call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. Verse 21. I went out full, and the Lord has brought me home again empty. Why do you call me Naomi, since the Lord has testified against me, and the Almighty has afflicted me? Have you ever talked to God that way? I have. And I say probably you have too. Naomi didn't want to be called pleasant anymore. You see, Naomi was still in mourning. Her life had been turned upside down. I'm just an emotional kind of guy, okay? We all can relate to Naomi. Her life had been turned upside down. And you know what is wonderful here? You see, Naomi was very honest with God. She was honest with the people around her. She was honest with her daughter-in-law about what was on the inside of her, about what she was at this particular time in her life. Perhaps we see in Naomi a need for each of us to be more honest with one another. And not just in sharing our joys and our triumphs, those times in life when things are really going good, but at times sharing the unedited, unabridged Lonnie Johnson. You see, we need to share those times with one another because life can be extremely hard. And we need the strength and the support from our fellow laborers in the faith. You see, perhaps God will use others to help bring us back, to strengthen us in our relationship with Him. So we should ask ourselves, are we willing to allow God to use us in such a powerful way? God had used Naomi to help Ruth come through the troubles of Moab. And as we see, He now will use Ruth to help Naomi come back from the bitterness, to come out of the sorrow she now found herself engulfed in. Verse 22. Verse 22 of chapter 2. I'm sorry, chapter 1. It says, so Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law with her, who returned from the country of Moab. Now they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. So again, we see the time in which they came into the country of Judah. Chapter 2, we find the man Boaz now entering into our story. So far, it has basically been Ruth and Naomi. Chapter 2, verse 1. I'm going to have to step this up a little bit. We only got 3 chapters to go. There was a relative of Naomi's husband, a man of great wealth of the family of Elimelech, and his name was Boaz. So here we have a man who was a relative of Naomi's late husband. So as the story unfolds, we find Boaz to not only be wealthy in land and position, but more importantly, we're going to see that this man was wealthy and rich in integrity and compassion. Qualities that all of us as God's people should be wanting to emulate. Verse 3. Then she left and went, and it's talking about Naomi. Then she left and went and gleaned, and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Abimelech. Now behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem, and he said to the reapers, "The Lord be with you." And they answered, "The Lord bless you." Now, it's interesting. If you just take the simple exchange between the boss and his workers, does it tell you anything about the character of Boaz? I think it says tremendous things about Boaz. The relationship he had with those who did the labor for him was wonderful, as we see from this simple exchange. Verse 5. Then Boaz said to his servant who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" So the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered and said, "It is a young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab." And she said, Ruth said to him, "Please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves." So she came and continued from morning until now, though she rested a little in the house. I haven't figured that one out yet. If anyone got an answer for that, let me know, would you? Couldn't come up with something of that. She rested a while in the house. Okay, so let's continue on here. I digress too much. Verse 8. Then Boaz said to Ruth, "You will listen, my daughter, will you not?" Interesting. "Do not go to glean in another field, nor go from here, but stay close by my young women," the young women that worked for Boaz. "Let your eyes be on the field which they reap, and go after them. Have I not commanded the young men not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink from what the young men have drawn." So she fell on her face, bowed down to the ground, and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner?" She had no illusions about who she was. None whatsoever. Verse 11. Then Boaz answered and said to her, "It has been fully reported to me all that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, and how you have left your father and your mother and the land of your birth, and have come to a people whom you did not know before." Now, I probably should have just stayed in this section, because there is so much we could learn from that just little portion there. But I want to get through the rest of the book. Now remember, this is a time when every man was doing what was right in his own eyes. Not everybody was upholding the laws of God. Not everybody was setting aside a portion of their fields for the poor and the foreigner. Back in Leviticus 9, God had commanded that the people not reap the corners of their fields and not to gather the gleanings, or that portion which fell to the ground during the harvest. These were to be left in the field for the poor and the stranger of the land to gather for themselves. It was made available to the poor, but it's interesting, they had to put forth effort. They had to work to gather it for themselves. You see, Boaz was a man not only of faith, Boaz was a man that kept the law of God. And by Boaz keeping those laws, this was the means for Ruth to be able to participate and to come into contact with those laws. Think about that for a moment. How many people know anything about the law of God because you keep the law of God? Can you think of any? I hope all of us can. Verse 12. She says, "The Lord repay your work, and a full reward be given to you by the Lord God of Israel." And notice what he said to her. under whose wings you have come for refuge. Again, can you imagine what words of encouragement this must have been? Spoken by a faithful servant of God. Spoken to a young woman who had given up on the gods of Moab. A woman who was coming to believe. Who was coming into a relationship with Yahweh. You can only imagine how that must have strengthened her belief in the God of Israel. Her blessing was not only that she had come into the barley field of a godly man, but she was coming under the wings of the God that Boaz worshipped. Verse 13. Then she said, "Let me find favor in your sight, my Lord, for you have comforted me and have spoken kindly to your maidservant, though I am not like one of your maidservants." Verse 14. Now Boaz said to her at mealtime, "Come here and eat of the bread and dip your piece of bread in the vinegar." So she sat beside the reapers, and he passed parched grain to her, and notice, and she ate and was satisfied, and she kept some back. She kept some back of the food that was given her. Again, as we're going to see, this is another glimpse into the heart of this young Gentile woman. Verse 15. And when she rose up to glean, Boaz commanded his young men, saying, "Let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not reproach her." So he was giving her a special pass, if you would, to do more than they normally were allowed to do. "Also let grain from the bundles fall purposely for her. Leave it that she may glean, and do not rebuke her." So she gleaned in the field until evening, and beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. Then she took it up, and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. Notice, so she brought out and gave to her what she had kept back after she had been satisfied. Here is a young woman who had absolutely nothing in this world. She was among the poorest of the poor. Yet we see that she had a heart filled with the desire to give and share with others. You see, she was living Philippians 2:4. "Let each of you look out not only for his own interest, but also for the interest of others." That was Ruth. So Naomi asked Ruth where she had gleaned that day, and Ruth told her, "In the field of a man named Boaz." Remember, Ruth had no idea who this man was. Then Naomi tells her that this man is one of her closest relatives. And here is a central message of the book of Ruth. You see, in the culture of Israel at that time, if a person had suffered loss, the closest relative of that person who had the capacity and was qualified to redeem that relative who had suffered loss, he was obligated to redeem and help that poor relative who was in such a state. The expression "kinsman redeemer" is often used for such a relative in order to convey this combination of a human relationship with a divinely appointed role of redeemer. So hence we see again Boaz as a type of Christ. A type of Christ who is our redeemer and has rescued us from our spiritual poverty. It's really a beautiful picture when you spend time thinking about it. Verse 22. And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that you go out with his young women, and that the people do not meet you or see you in any other field." So she stayed close by the young women of Boaz to glean until the end of the barley harvest and wheat harvest, and she dwelt with her mother-in-law. Remember, this story unfolds during the time of the barley harvest in Israel. during the time of the Passover and Pentecost, during the time of the first fruits. The first fruits of God are exemplified by these three individuals, Naomi, Ruth, and Boaz. People whose hearts were filled with the goodness of God. People who show a heart of love and compassion and actions motivated by that love. A people of integrity and compassion. A people whose reputation goes before them. Chapter 3, verse 1. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, shall I not seek security for you, that it may be well with you?" Notice her continued concern for the well-being of Ruth. "Now Boaz, whose young women you were with, is he not our relative?" Again, kinsman redeemer. "In fact, he is winnowing barley tonight in the threshing floor. Therefore, wash yourself, anoint yourself, put on your best garment, and go down to the threshing floor. But do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. So don't let it be known there you're there among the rest of the workers. Then it shall be when he lies down that you shall notice the place where he lies." So they were just scattered all over the floor, if you would, on their blankets. "And you shall go in, uncover his feet, and lie down, and he will tell you what you should do." Now, we all understand there's no illicit sexual behavior that's happening here. Remember, we're under the laws of God that He had given to Israel. Under that law, when a woman's husband died, God gave a law that the closest next of kin would honor their family member or their brother by taking her, the woman, as his wife. By bringing her into their own family, that would ensure that any children that they might have would not bear the name of the dead man, the other husband, or a dead husband, but would bear the name of the deceased father, so that name never went out of the land of Israel. That's why God did it. If a man died and left a wife, his closest next of kin was obligated to take that woman into his family as his wife, so that man's name would not die out in the land of Israel. Seems strange to us, I know, but that's the way God wanted it done. What we see happening here is Ruth submissively at the feet of Boaz. That's all that means. She willingly and voluntarily submits herself into that position of submission to Boaz. Let's continue reading here. Verse 5, "And she said to her, 'All that you say to me, I will do.' So she submissively did what Naomi told her to do. So she went down to the threshing floor and so forth and so on. Verse 8, "Now it happened at midnight that the man was startled. He turned himself, and there a woman was lying at his feet." It was dark, remember. There's no lights. All of a sudden he realizes someone's laying down at the foot of the blanket that he's laying on. "And he said, 'Who are you?'" Had no clue who this was. "And she said, 'I am Ruth, your maidservant. Take your maidservant under your wing, for you are a close relative.'" So she was revealing to Boaz, which he already knew, that he was the kinsman redeemer that could redeem Naomi. Verse 10. "Then he said, 'Blessed are you of the Lord, my daughter, for you have shown more kindness at the end than at the beginning, in that you did not go after young men, whether poor or rich.'" So she had set a stellar example in her relationships with other people. "And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you request, for all the people of the town know that you are a virtuous woman." So we know there was no hanky-panky going on here, don't we? Absolutely not. The symbolism here is quite revealing in the sense that She comes under the wing or under the protection of Boaz because it says he took his cloak and he placed it over her as she was there at the foot of where he was sleeping. Remember what Boaz told Ruth. You have come under the wings of God for refuge. Maybe he didn't recognize that he would become that wing used by God. God uses people to serve people. He uses people to help people. He uses people to manifest His will with other people. We're all God's instruments. This is still happening today with God's people. Let's see, where were we here? Verse 11. And all the people who were at the gate and elders said, "We are..." Whoops, I'm way ahead of myself. I'm sorry. Back to verse 3, verse 11. Verse 12. Now it is true that I am a close relative. However, you think a man couldn't get lost in four chapters, wouldn't you? Anyway. Now it is true that I am a close relative. However, there is a relative closer than I. I won't go through this whole story, but basically there was a relative that was a little bit closer as far as relatives goes to Naomi than Boaz was. Now, Boaz, again, we see the character of Boaz. He did not take advantage of this situation. He knew the law of God. And he knew God's law said that the closest relative would have opportunity to redeem. Redeem simply meant Naomi had a piece of property that they still had there in Judah. And so she could sell the property, which she desperately needed to sell. But the relative had the opportunity to redeem that property first. In other words, he could buy it from her first. He was obligated to do that. So Boaz, and I'll shorten this, Boaz sets up a meeting with this relative and he gathers the other men as witnesses to it. And he tells the man, "You're the closest relative. You have opportunity first to redeem this land from Naomi." And he immediately says, "Yes, I will redeem it." Aha. But Boaz says, "But this includes Ruth." Remember, he would be required to take Ruth as his wife into his family. When that came onto the scene, guess what he did? He said, "No, I will not redeem it. You redeem it." Now, again, Boaz was an honorable man. Boaz respected God's law. He was not going to work through this situation in a way that did not please God. So once this man decided that he was not going to redeem it, Boaz did. Now, again, the character of the individuals we're talking about. We don't know who this kinsman was that refused to redeem it. But it's interesting what is revealed about his character. When it was just Naomi, this old woman, and he could get her land and increase his ownership or his property, he thought that was a good deal. This is good for me. But as soon as Ruth was thrown into the mix, he decided, "No, there's nothing good in this for me. It's not good for me to take a foreign woman into my family, to have a foreign woman as a wife." So it no longer was good for him. But Boaz's character was totally different. See, Boaz was a man of compassion. He was a man who showed great love. And Boaz took this on, redeemed this, took Ruth as his wife, irregardless of what results from that might be in the land of Judah. He could have been ostracized for doing that. Didn't let it stop him, because it was the right thing to do according to the law of God. Let's finish the story here in chapter 4. go down to verse 13. For lack of time, we'll finish up here. It says, so Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. And when he went into her, the Lord gave her conception, and she bore a son. Then the woman said to Naomi, the women said to Naomi, Naomi, blessed be the Lord who has not left you this day without a close relative, and may his name be famous in Israel. And may it be to you a restorer of life and nourisher of your old age, for your daughter-in-law who loves you, who is better to you than seven sons, has borne him. Isn't that beautiful? Verse 16. Then Naomi took the child and laid him on her bosom and became a nurse to him. And the neighbor women gave him a name, saying, there is a son born to Naomi. And they called his name Obed. He is the father of Jesse, who was the father of David. It's a wonderful story. It's a wonderful message about wonderful people, ordinary people, nothing exceptional by themselves, but people who served a great purpose. A great purpose for what was going to come in the future. We can only ask ourselves, are we ready? Are we prepared when opportunity comes our way to glorify God in what we do? Or would we think it's just a coincidence, it's just the way things happened? Do we understand that at times God is testing us? He's wanting to know that we will look beyond the moment. We will look beyond any personal loss that may be ours at the moment. And we will look to the greater good. We will look to the glory of God's kingdom. So we know the end of the book. Naomi was again happy. She had a little baby on her lap. She served as a nurse to the little guy named Obed. It's a nice name, isn't it? Little baby Obed. I guess back then it was good. Hope nobody's got a kid named Obed. His name was Obed, whose son was Jesse, whose son was David, whose great, 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 great son was none other than Jesus Christ. Did you count those greats? Did I miss any? You see, we not only have a loving God, but we have a God that has had a wonderful plan of salvation from the very beginning. And we have a God who has and continues to work that plan. And He uses ordinary individuals to carry forth that plan. Sometimes in truly miraculous ways, as He did with Naomi and Ruth. Women who exhibited the qualities of integrity, compassion, tenacity, hard work, and honor. Qualities that many, many centuries later, we see multiplied a hundredfold in the life and character of their future kinsman redeemer, Jesus Christ. Tomorrow is Mother's Day, ladies, as you already know. I can only say Happy Mother's Day. Have a wonderful day, and may all of you be like Ruth.